Watch your eyes.
This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus.
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores. It's 3-0 United States.
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
And we have a special guest joining us on
Greg Berhalter.
Hey, welcome in. Greg Berhalter's here. This is awesome.
I kind of look like him a little bit.
That's right. Well, you do have the shaved head.
That's exactly what I was going for.
Evil Bald Colin is what they call him on the station. Colin Berenger, your producer for Rothman and Ice on The Fan, and also host of Mad About Hoops with Tim Hall, the college basketball podcast we do, has decided to join us for this podcast because he is a massive soccer fan, USA fan as well, USA soccer fan. How you doing, Colin? You ready for this?
Yeah. Well, I'm nervous. I got that pit in my stomach that I'm super nervous about. But at the same time, I mean, it's a great opportunity. I've told you guys in the weeks leading up to us, like, this is a team that could go 0-3 or 3-0 in group play. That's just how wide open it feels.
Yeah. I am with you on that. I am terrified right now about the start of the World Cup with this U.S. national team, and we'll get into why. We'll explore all that. We'll get our temperatures on this team and the roster and everything else, and then I've got some questions for you guys, some expectations. What are we thinking? What happens if they don't make it out of the group stage, for example? We'll dive into all that.
I don't want to think about that.
You're right.
Taking me to the bad place.
So we'll get into all those things, and then just kind of, you know, give you our final thoughts on where we think this goes and what we think is likely to happen for this U.S. national team as they roll in. So if you're looking for just nothing else other than U.S. soccer preview for the World Cup, we've got you covered here. That's what we're doing. Yeah, go ahead, Beamer.
I was going to say, before we get going with Colin, little backstory on Colin. Colin, you played soccer. You were a kicker in American football as well. Your sister is a magnificent soccer player.
She plays at Baldwin Wallace.
All right,
yes.
So she plays at Baldwin
really?
Wallace.
Okay, awesome.
She's very good. So you have a background, obviously, of everything with the game, probably more than T-Bone and I, other than just cracking open the microphones.
No, he's actually played.
And speak, yes, you've actually played soccer. I played in a rec league. I threw a bicycle kick one time. I think Dayton, Ohio had their first earthquake ever when that happened when I landed. Anyways, that's beside
that's
the point.
That's definitely the term they use when they do that is, I threw a bicycle kick.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
what they
for
say.
Sure.
That's how the soccer
well,
players
I attempted,
say it.
I attempted a bicycle kick. Ball actually went off my knee and I missed. So I did get up there. I did make contact, but it did not go in. I still took my shirt off and ran around, even though I missed it. Colin, as well, you're a Premier League fan. Why don't you dive into who you support in the Premier League as well? Because I know we have fun conversations about these guys all the time.
Yeah, so when I got into it back about, more seriously in the more recent years, but when I was just kind of a casual fan about 10 years ago, I was thinking, you know, I support the Browns, so why don't I find the most Brownsy team I can find in the Premier League? And that happened to be Tottenham. And you know what? Let me tell you, the way they play this year, it sure feels like it.
Yeah. I mean, they play in something called a Champions League, which I can't ever imagine the Browns getting invited to a thing called the Champions League.
No trophies, though.
No trophies. That's fair. Right. So, yeah, that's a solid pick out of you if you were looking for, like, a team that's like the Browns that probably isn't going to get relegated ever.
Like, they've got talent. I mean, they've got the Nick Chubb. They've got the Harry Kane.
Yes.
But at the same time, they're playing, like, stop your heart type of games against, like, Leeds United.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Bones
for,
guys.
Thanks for, yeah, Leeds United. That's right. That's my team this year. That's who I've adopted this year. Only this year.
Well, you're a good Patriot.
I mean, you kind of have to, especially as an American, with Jesse Marsh, Tyler Adams,
yeah,
and Brendan Aronson.
Yeah, the Medford Messi, as we like to call him. Dude's he's a pretty talented guy. All right, so like you said, this could be a wide-open group for the U.S. For those who have not listened to any of the other stuff we've talked about, or you have no idea who the U.S. are playing, they have three games. They get 3 points for a win, one for a tie, zero for a loss. After those three games, all four teams in the group, they'll add up their points and they'll figure out who goes on to the next round. Top two teams get to go. The U.S. is in a group with Iran, Wales, and a little team called England.
It's coming home.
It's not coming home. Screw them. What are we talking about? It's coming home. No, we're going to stop it from coming home. That's what I want. But here's what I also want. I want you to know how nervous I am, because I look at what England has. That is a top five team in the world. They clearly are of the caliber that they could win this whole thing. They are that good. Wales is a team that is on par, I think even probably a little better talent-wise could be. As far as what their talent has actually shown they can accomplish in their careers than the U.S., and they have a top-end guy in Gareth Bale who's beyond anything that a U.S. national team has really ever
scored
had.
The equalizer at the death MLS Cup final.
Disrespect Josie Altidore like that.
Yeah, your guy.
Right. I forgot. Gareth Bale is now just an MLS striker. But at one time, this was a man playing for Real Madrid, among other luminary teams he's played for. So, fine. And then you have Iran, who they won their group. Excuse me. I almost choked on my own spit. They won their group in Asia, and they were a pot three team and somehow ended up in this group with the U.S. and England and Wales. Like, they're not going to be an easy out. They're a really talented team. So this is going to be a tough, tough group to get out of. Now, that all said, why, maybe I'll let you guys answer this. It's been 8 years since the U.S. Mm-hmm. was in a World Cup because they missed in 2018. I have the number here somewhere. It's like 3,000, how many days? 3,000 something days since the U.S. played in a World Cup.
It would be 3,000 days, yeah.
3,065 days. Yep. That's it.
We don't need to talk about that game either.
No, we're all good with that. We don't need to talk about it. But
you know who, hey, fun fact before we get going on this. Do you know who the last goal scorer for the U.S. men's national team in a World Cup is?
I do.
Was it Deuce?
No.
Who was it?
Julian Green.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Julian Green.
Was going to be the future of... That was... And again, for those who may wonder, what's changed about the U.S. national team?
That.
Well, here's one thing,
now
right?
Now it's just Christian Pulisic.
No, Chris Wondolowski.
Right. Oh, God.
Well, you brought this up in the office the other day, Colin, and you're spot on, that we went from a manager 8 years ago in Jurgen Klinsmann who was like, I must find every guy with the possibility of attaining... like U.S. heritage or having like a grandfather who was from the United States in Germany and then get that guy to flip to the U.S. That was the strategy years ago. Now, Berhalter's almost a guy who's like, oh, you have European experience? I don't know if I need that.
To hell with you.
Yeah. And so it's a very different thing that's happened here for the U.S. And we'll talk more about Greg Berhalter and all of that. But one thing that has changed for this team is the era of the Landon Donovan crew, that whole time is done, mm-hmm. right? Landon Donovan played in his first World Cup in 2002, and then he was the end of that cycle was like 2014, where he was like the last old guy. Actually, he was left off that team,
yep.
wasn't he?
Yep.
But he like
he was, yeah.
But that was like he was still in the mix and could have possibly made it and was left off the team. But that era now is we're fully away from that era, and we kind of went through this what they called lost generation that didn't have the big talent. But Christian Pulisic, part of that group that was supposed to, they were supposed to make it in 2018. He was on the field. He could have helped with that.
Fateful night in Trinidad and Tobago.
Right. But and we're not going to talk about it because we already said we're not going to talk about it. But Christian Pulisic was one of the few guys who was there. And he was like super young. And it was his first World Cup, we hoped. Now this is his actual first World Cup. Like he comes in now as a, you know, the phenom who's realize some of that potential
is
playing
really,
in the Premier League.
Is that something that we have doctored up ourselves here for casual fans? Honest question.
I'm saying as far as like the talent he possesses, yeah, he is one of the most talented players the U.S. has ever produced. Has he turned it into the level that I think he should be playing at in the Premier League? No. But is he disappointing to me at times? Absolutely. But is he supremely talented? Yes. I mean, he's one of the most talented players the U.S. has ever produced. And I'd like to see him take the next step in this World Cup and be a breakout, not a breakout star because everyone knows who he is. Yeah. We're all kind of sick of hearing about him at some point. But we know who he is. I'm saying now's the time to show that hype is not wrong, to your point, Beam.
So on the Christian Pulisic thing, I mean, listen, we've talked about him. We've been doing this podcast for 4 years now. I mean, we've talked about him playing at Borussia Dortmund, and we've talked about him and his big move to Chelsea. And all of a sudden, he has a disagreement with Thomas Tuchel, and Thomas Tuchel gets fired. Is that because the owner at Chelsea being American and he wants Pulisic there? I don't know. But whatever it is, you're right. He's going to have to be fantastic in this tournament. I think for, you know, the U.S. men's national team, if they want to get out of this group, if they want to go and do some things in the knockout rounds, he is going to have to be the guy that you expected him to be when he came through the national system, when he missed out on that last World Cup cycle. and a guy who brings his worth of what Chelsea paid for him upwards of $60 million, right? Like, that's when you're talking about, like, eye-popping numbers. Like, boy, American going to one of the biggest clubs in the world for a number like that, you set the expectations. And so far, has Christian Pulisic been good for this team? Yeah, but we're sitting here and, like, pumping our chests, like, oh, this is going to be the guy. He's going to lead us. He's going to win the Ballon d'Or. He's going to be the Golden Boot winner of the tournament. Like, he's not that guy. And so for expectations for me, when we go to guys with immense more pressure, surely Christian Pulisic has that on him. There's no doubt. Sometimes he can't get out of his own way. When we're looking at this as fans and wanting this team to do well, I almost think that Tyler Adams has way more pressure on Christian Pulisic, given the state of this group, Colin, with everything that he does and the way that he can control the game. Can Christian Pulisic go out there and win the game for you? Yeah, absolutely he can. Can Tyler Adams put in a bad shift and lose you the game if he turns off for a split second in this group? Yeah, way more than Christian Pulisic can.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. He's kind of what makes it run through that middle and how they like to get it out and go to the wings, especially how dominant their wings have been in qualifying too. I'm kind of curious to see the X factor ability of Gio Reyna. Like, what are we going to get from him? Because especially in the final part of that window with Dortmund, you kind of could tell he was kind of taking it a little easy because he wanted to, you know, preserve himself to be healthy, finally be healthy.
I was happy. When they sat him after 45 minutes, like, all right, you're healthy.
I was happy.
Go to Cutter.
I mean, besides being a Tottenham fan, and, you know, the red card being in my favor, it was good to get Adams out and on two soft fouls so that he's not dealing with any possible issues there. Like, I don't know. Maybe it was just me being hypersensitive to playing that close to the window, but it was like, you know, play a little bit, get your feet wet, and then just get out.
Yeah, yeah. So let's pause there and let's go into the roster. Like, let's just give everybody the roster, Beamer. We can work through that, and then we'll kind of give you, like, what we think the starting lineup is going to be, what we think it should be. Guys, we're going to come off the bench for this team.
Yep.
I will say this. The potential that is on this team is amazing, especially when we get into, like, who they have to bring in off the bench for this team in some positions. Not in all positions, but in some positions, the U.S. is extremely deep. But
yeah, goalies for this one, we talked about this in our group preview, was Greg Berhalter leaving Zach Steffanoff. So he is not making the trip to Qatar. He is not over there with the boys. So your keepers, Matt Turner, Ethan Horvath, and Sean Johnson. I'm sure we can get into the Zach Steffen conversation as well. Defenders for your Cameron Carter-Vickers, Serginho Dest, Aaron Long, Shaq Moore, Tim Ream, Anthony Robinson, also goes by Jedi, which is a tremendous nickname, Joe Scally, DeAndre Yedlin, and Walker Zimmerman. Your midfielders, Brendan Aaronson, Kellen Acosta, Tyler Adams, Luca Della Torre, Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, Christian Roldan, and then your forwards that you're going to be rolling out there in Qatar in that first match day: Jesus Ferreira, Jordan Morris, Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Josh Sargent, Tim Weah, and Haji Wright. So that's your 26-man roster for the U.S. Men's National Team 2022 run to the cup.
Colin, was there anyone who stood out to you that got selected in that roster that you are not a fan of for the U.S. national team? Is there anyone?
There's always quite a few. Some that I don't like, but I understand them being there. Like, I understand a Christian Roldan or a Jesus Ferreira. I get those guys being on this roster. You just know Greg enjoys those guys. But, man, I get that it was between Jordan Morris and Paul Arriola, but at the same time, like, hopefully he doesn't see any time. Like, this has got to be number 26 on the roster, hopefully.
Huge Jordan Morris guy, Colin.
But I just don't. Dude, if he plays, he's just not a threat. I just don't get
it. I've never understood the Jordan Morris defenders. I've never understood the people who like this dude as a player. Like, in MLS, he's been a solid, very good player. But he's not a guy to me.
He's the kind of guy that Greg wants.
Yeah. I guess, man. Except, whatever. We can do it now. Unless if you're Ricardo Pepi and it's like, hey, if you want to play, you better get over to Europe and do some stuff. And he's like, oh, I went over to Europe and I'm like banging in goals and I'm setting up goals. And it's like, yeah, I'm leaving you off the roster. Now, that's Ricardo Pepi's a forward. He could have been a target striker for this team. He is not brought in on the roster. Bigger guy, kind of like a body type that you don't have as much on this U.S. national team right now. And like you said, Jesus Ferreira is a guy who, you know, this is an MLS Young Player of the Year. He's very talented. He is a good player. But he and Ricardo Pepi had kind of the same issue. Jesus Ferreira scored one goal in, I think, 11 U.S. national team matches, 11 or 12. Ricardo Pepi did not score a goal for the U.S. in, like, almost a year after having a bunch of goals in World Cup qualifying matches, big goals that were extremely helpful And he is, I mean, I think he scored three in World Cup qualifying, which is pretty good, but he didn't have any for like a year. And so that left Greg Berhalter saying, well, I'm not going to bring him. And I'm not saying that's the wrong decision. I just, you really have one type of player now. All the guys you have are more or less smaller guys, under 6 foot guys. You're not going to have like big bodies that are going to up and like win a ton of aerial battles. I mean, maybe your best guy in the air at forward is Josh Sargent.
Yeah.
Like that's, I mean, yeah. And Josh Sargent is not a big dude, but like if you're thinking,
yeah,
if
but he's gritty,
if you're like me and you watch, you know, I was bathed in the blood of Brian McBride many a moon ago watching the World Cup, right? And the thing with Brian McBride is that's a dude who was like over 6 feet tall, got up in the air, was going to go up for every header on every cross. He was going to be in the mix. He could come back and help you on a set piece on defense. Like, they don't have that forward on this roster.
John Brooks is pretty good at heading balls into goals in the World
Cup. He was a defender.
Well,
and,
I know, but he's a good aerial guy.
Well, it's just a shame that he's been kidnapped and then shot up to Saturn, and we've never heard of him again. I don't know. Like, that guy's just gone. He's completely out of the picture.
Talking about the big body guys, I didn't think it was actually going to happen, but I thought it was a possibility that PFOC would be on this team because
Jordan PFOC has played very well in Europe and did not get a look either, which was kind of surprising. Haji Wright has been scoring goals and playing well, but again, I'm hopeful that
I get the Haji Wright pick.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do.
No, absolutely. He brings camaraderie with especially a bunch of those guys he played with back with the U-17s.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, there you need that too, right? I mean, I know Greg Berhalter is not looking at this like a fantasy roster where it's like, well, this guy and this guy and this guy.
All 26 of these guys are not going to see action. I mean,
well, but I mean, they also have to, the team has to be good. Like the chemistry has to be good. The locker room has to be good. The hotel has to be good. Like, the teams that are always successful 9 times out of 10, everyone gets along really well. And so that's a good point that like Haji Wright bringing that camaraderie and not being a scrub of a player. He's a good player. But I think that's something that we have to keep in mind as we talk about these roster decisions where some of them don't make a lot of sense in some cases. But maybe like, again, maybe Jordan Morris just gets in the hotel and he is the light. Like at the buffet, he is always letting the hotel staff know, hey, we're out of milk. We're out of OJ. Let's get this fixed. Like, maybe he's really good in that way because I don't see much else of a reason for him to be on this roster, but whatever.
No, I don't either. I mean, to Colin's point, I don't get it. Like, it's like the scene out of Big, like where he's explaining the toy to Tom Hanks there. He's like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Like, you had a multitude of different options that you can go, and Jordan Morris is the guy that you picked. I think that was a maddening one for U.S. men's national team fans. And again, I mean, I know this is our guy, and Greg had very, very a lot of chemistry with and a lot of time spent with him. I hope the best for the U.S. men's national team, obviously. The Zach Steffen debacle and leaving him off the roster, even with Greg's familiarity, and even if he wasn't a Columbus Crew player and we weren't doing a podcast based out of Columbus, Ohio, in a studio that is Columbus Crew themed, I don't understand that. I mean, Sean Johnson, okay, he's been good in the times that he's played for the U.S. men's national team. He's been good in MLS. Ethan Horvath, all right. I mean, Matt Turner has been hurt. He's been injured. He's been dealing with an injury.
Yeah.
And so I know that Zach Steffen has as well. Like, he's been in and out of the lineup for his club team in Middlesbrough over in England. He maybe hasn't been in the best run of form, but when you're talking about top-tier keeper ability, is he maddening some sometimes? Will he let in a howler of a goal? Yeah, he can give you that, but he can also stop goals coming in the box at 80 miles an hour with a palm of a hand out of nowhere. So I guess the weighing of that, like top-tier ability, or is he in a bad mental space? I don't know what happened. And for Turner's aspect and his perspective, I hope he's healthy and I hope he's in good form, because I think it was rather shocking that that happened.
I agree with you on that. We said this when this all happened, right? That, I mean, you had Zach Steffen was signed by Manchester City and then didn't play. We knew that was going to happen. And then Matt Turner got signed by Arsenal, and we knew he was going to struggle to get time as well. Like, and so when that all happened over the last couple of years, we were looking at this going, hang on a second. We're going to have the two guys who are kind of like top two keepers in the pool that are going to be playing on teams where they may not get regular minutes. That can't be great. And then Steffen got loaned out a couple different times, and now he's, you know, with Middlesbrough, and he was with a German club the year before. Like, so
how much do you think
it didn't work out for him? But like, I'm just saying, like, I think it almost felt like Greg just had to pick one or the other and say, that's my starter. And then all these other guys fill in different roles, but they're not the starter. Like, Matt Turner is the starter if healthy. Like, that's just no question.
How much do you think that performance against Uruguay and that friendly from Sean Johnson played into his role in making this team?
Oh, I think the Sean Johnson thing is more of a, like, he's not a threat to, like, ever come in and be, like, the guy. But if there's an injury or something in a game where we have to send someone cold, we might choose him over Horvat.
He's good enough.
Just because he's, like, this veteran guy who's played in big games. He's played in big matches for his club team. Like, he's not going to be afraid of a big stage, you know? And I think the Horvat thing is, like, probably more talented overall as a keeper and has a brighter future with the U.S. national team. But the Sean Johnson pick, I almost feel like it was like, yeah, this dude can play, and if we have to for 30 minutes because we have an injury, we'll feel more comfortable putting him in. I don't know. Maybe he'll never be on the reserve list for the keeper, and maybe he just is, you know, always off, not on the 18. But I tend to think he'll be around as the guy where it's like, yeah, if we have an injury in this game, we feel comfortable sending him in. But maybe I'm wrong. So here's why goalkeeper, as much as that's important, may not be as important in this World Cup. And that is because the U.S. defense has been relatively strong, mostly because of who they have kind of up the middle of the park. Walker Zimmerman is your big, like, that's, we've talked a lot about guys who have question marks about. You have no question marks, at least I don't feel anybody does, about Walker Zimmerman.
He's
like,
good.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
good.
He's your starting center back. He's your, like, one of your keys to that defense. Him and Tyler Adams as defensive midfielder, those two guys have a really good partnership. They understand each other. Tyler Adams is a smart player. I have a lot of thoughts on him. I love Tyler Adams as a player. And then Walker Zimmerman holds down your back line. The question is at the other center back spot. That's where we have issues because of the injuries that have existed. So Miles Robinson was the clear, no doubt, other choice there to pair up with Walker Zimmerman. And then he blew out his Achilles back in, what was that, May or April, early in the MLS season. Early. So he was already knew he was going to miss. And then Chris Richards, who had kind of taken on, like, well, if it's, you know, maybe he's the guy, he could step in. He got hurt. Mm-hmm. And so now he's not there either. So the guys they have kind of at center back that are going to have to work in there, you have Tim Ream, who's a long time, I mean, one of the few old guys on this team that I would look at and say, I can't believe Tim Ream's still around, but he is.
Pep Guardiola said a couple of weeks ago that if Tim Ream was 10 years younger, he'd be playing for Pep at Manchester City.
Well, and he captains a Premier League team.
Yep.
That should be noted, right? He captains Fulham. Going down is a long line of U.S. players who have had nice games at Craven Cottage, right? That's,
yeah.
I mean, hell, they have a bar at Craven Cottage named McBride's after Brian McBride.
Like, they also have a Michael Jackson statue there, which
they do.
I find interesting.
They do. That's right. So anyway, like, Tim Ream has Premier League I am guaranteeing you the reason he's on this roster is because Greg Berhalter looked at the schedule and goes, we play England and Wales. A lot of dudes from Premier League
there.
I
guarantee you that Tim Ream starts.
I
think
really?
So, too.
You think so?
Yes.
I think so, too, over Aaron Long.
Aaron Long's the other guy.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, Aaron Long, and then Cameron Carter-Vickers also has Premier League experience as well. Like, these guys, they have definitely all got the potential to start for this one. Tim Ream, though, does have that leadership aspect. He's just, man, I'm worried about him.
He's got lead feet.
Right. He is not quick. He's not quick. So it's got to be smart, tactical precision that he's going to have to bring. And Zimmerman's going to have to cover a lot of ground for whoever he's playing next to, I would think.
So the whole Aaron Long situation, remember, because in the lead up, I mean, he's getting a lot of time.
Yep.
He was getting a lot of time next to Walker. And it looked like, all right, well, this is going to be the guy. And I'm wondering, with the inexperience that he has at the national team level, being thrust into your first World Cup, like, It's a sink or swim moment, and I'm trying to get inside of Greg's head here and just thinking about the thought processes that he has, whether right or wrong, and that's what we're here for, to, you know, dissect all of this. But is he going to go with a guy who on his day will be better than Tim Ream, and if you have a pacey attacker, like, will be better at marking that man, and or are you going to go with the stymie veteran and say, listen, man, you know, you captain a Premier League team, you've been playing pretty well, you can't guard Alejandro Garnacho for Manchester United. That's a different story for a different day in the last minute winner. But at the same time, I think I'm almost guaranteeing you, at least trying to get into the mind of Triple G, that he is going to go and run out Tim Ream there as his other starting cornerback. That's the way that I feel about it.
Yeah. So let's do this. I will tell you who I think is going to start back line for those who are not paying attention. Like you said, Jedi Robinson
yep.
is your right back. Sergiño Dest, the pride of AC Milan now, which, man, the guy's resume from Barcelona, AC Milan, the teams he's played for, he's your left back, Walker Zimmerman, and some combination of Tim Ream, Aaron Long, Cameron Carter-Vickers, one of those three guys will play alongside Walker Zimmerman. That's your back four. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will talk about what the rest of the starting lineup probably looks like. We haven't talked really about the positives. We've talked a lot of negatives or question marks on this team. We'll get into the positive aspects and with the strengths of this team when we come back and tell you what our expectations are going forward. You're listening to the U.S. Men's National Team World Cup preview from Bone and Beam United. Welcome back to our World Cup preview. I should mention, unrelated to anything we've been discussing so far, there is a global celebration of soccer that is going on sometime in the next few weeks. Yep. And if you would like to participate in watching any of the global celebration of soccer, I don't know what that could be.
Nope.
Zaftig Italian Village is the place. We are going to do watch parties there with Zaftig.
Watching for, what?
For, well, there are a few dates that are come to mind. Monday, November 21st.
Okay.
They're calling it Whale Day.
All right.
At Zaftig Italian Village. I don't know
it's
why.
I will be there and I have a lot of blubber. Whale Day.
I see.
Got it.
I see.
Yep.
Then that's at 2 p.m. is the celebration of global soccer on Whale Day, right. Monday, November 21st.
Yep.
And then Friday, November 25th, we celebrate and give thanks for the fact that we are no longer under British rule.
Yes.
So they call that English, old English lunch day there. Friday, November 25th. Is when you could possibly, I don't know, hang out and celebrate soccer in a global fashion at Zaftig Italian Village.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tuesday, November 29th, I ran so far away. I don't know why I just hummed that. That has nothing to do with anything. Anyway, no, Tuesday, November 22nd, you can run to Zaftig Italian Village at 2 p.m. and celebrate global soccer with us by hoisting a USA IPA.
It's delicious.
So anyway, go to at Bone Beam United on Twitter if you'd like to find out more details about those global soccer celebrations, whatever they may be. All right, back to our World Cup preview. Thank God we shifted gears out of whatever we were just talking about. That was totally different than what we're discussing.
Boy,
now.
Did you have an aneurysm? What were you doing?
I don't know, man. That was so weird.
Yeah.
All right, so we've talked a lot about the flaws of this U.S. national team, some question marks for this team. The depth of this U.S. national team, I feel like, is in the midfield. I mean, this is a midfield. I already talked about Tyler Adams a little bit, who starts things off in the defensive midfield. But then, I mean, you get to Weston McKennie. You get to Christian Pulisic, clearly, as we've mentioned. Gio Reyna is a guy who may not even start for this team. But my God, could he be good? Yunus Musa will start for this team.
Yep.
He has been a revelation. This midfield is going to be really good. They play a 4-3-3. Obviously, Gio Reyna is probably going to play up in the top three in the forward line. But the point is, they've got a lot of guys that can move the ball, who are able to read a defense, who are able to, I think, really play well when they're all playing together. And for the first time in most of the last 4 years, knock on wood, they're all healthy.
Yep.
So maybe we get to see them all play. Like, I basically have said, if we could get these guys all healthy for a month straight, sky's the limit for this
team.
Now
we're here.
We're here and they're relatively healthy.
Yep.
So fingers crossed.
I was about to say, between Pulisic, McKennie, Gio and
Tyler Adams,
like, I think they've only played like a combined like single digit amount of games within the last year or something like that.
Right. They have not had a lot of time together. And so dividing those two groups up, like Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, those guys are all the like old veteran 23, 24 year old guys who haven't played in a World Cup yet, but they're all expected to kind of be the leadership on this team on the field. Then you have Gio Reyna, who's 19.
He's brilliant.
He is.
He's brilliant.
If healthy and if available for all three games, my God, like you can deploy a lot of different front lines here with this forward group that you have, because Gio could come in and play. Obviously, it depends on how they're going to deploy everyone in this lineup, but Berhalter's got a lot of options there if he wants to. You've got Brendan Aaronson, who is still, I guess, the older age group, but he's more recently come into like his own as a tremendous player at midfield.
Oh, he's great.
You have Tim Weah, who I think is phenomenal when healthy, is a really good addition to this team. I mean, you said Yunus Musa, we haven't talked much about, but like, this is a really solid group of forward, midfield, attacking options that can do some very good things. And Yunus Musa is also very good at like organizing, getting the ball back, getting it back into the dangerous spaces.
I think him and Weston McKennie are both great at that. Weston McKennie's very good at also getting into dangerous
spaces. Well, and
you
know what? I was talking about aerial like dangers. Weston McKennie is going to be the guy, especially if like Josh Sargent isn't out there. Like, that's the guy that they're all going to be watching on set pieces to try to stop. So if he can get up and win those battles and at least knock the ball down into the box, and then you've got a bunch of guys who could pounce on it and knock it in, like, that's going to be their option on set pieces, I feel like.
Yeah, I do too. Colin, if you're putting your managerial hat on, you know, you're running out the midfield there, and we can get to the attack in the second wings and striker as well. If you're running out three guys, I would imagine that you're going to have Tyler Adams there sitting back a little bit as your defense. Who anchors him in the midfield for you? Who do you want to see, and who do you think Greg's going to go with? Because those are wildly different arguments.
I think he's going to do the Musa McKennie stack right there.
Kind of do
like an inverted triangle right there. I think that's his best option. But quite honestly, just watching experts, especially on Fox and CBS and Paramount, whatever, I've seen so many different variations. Like, I just saw a lineup last night that didn't have McKennie in the starting lineup. But the way that they're building this, I think they had like an Adams Musa midfield, and then they were more of an attack front.
I got you.
But yeah, it's just going to depend on whether he wants to be aggressive or conservative with his lineup. And I think especially against Wales to start, he should be aggressive.
I agree.
And we'll get to the forwards later on. But I think definitely with that triangle in the middle, and I would get a little freaky with it. I don't always agree with Alexi Lalas, but he's been on the false nine idea since the end of qualifying. And I think if you did, he was going with Wea. I think you could also put Reyna in that mix, in that false nine. But if you don't want to play one of these top three guys in your first game as a striker, you could do that and still keep Wea and Pulisic on the edges and still be very attackive.
Yeah, I think that the group that they have here gives him some options to mess around with it. Now, from a tactic standpoint for Greg, this is one of the things with Greg Berhalter that especially if you're not following this and you're like, why do some of the U.S. fans seem to not like Greg Berhalter? Well, among
the reason, Bone.
Among the reasons, one of them is that Greg Berhalter's system is one that has benefited greatly when he employed it with the Columbus Crew. Obviously, we're Crew fans here. We all got to watch a lot of those games, so we know quite a bit about what it's like to watch him manage a roster and manage and organize a team. And I mean, that group played exceptionally well together.
Because they stayed in the system.
Because club teams play 30-some games a year, and they have a billion practices to get it right. National teams, you're bringing in guys from all over the world, playing different systems, different deployments, different everything. And then now you're saying you have to be in this spot every single time when the ball goes here. And when it goes there, you have to be over in this other spot every single time. And then when the ball comes here, you have to be in this spot every single time. And having this very drilled system where you've got to know 19 different responsibilities on every movement. And I mean, again, it's not quite the same. And Colin, you could probably speak to this better than I could, but it's the difference between having like an NBA offense where it's like, we just kind of let these dudes play. We get the ball to, we isolate one guy and let him work versus like we run the triangle offense, you know, like the triangle offense being very detailed. And that's Greg Berhalter's system. It's very detailed. You have to know your responsibilities. You have to know what happens when, as opposed to being more free flowing and like, hey man, let's just let these guys go play and let them figure it out. Am I off base on that?
No, I think you're kind of on the point there, especially when you're going from a system, like, let's say you're more aggressive with your club, but you have to play more of a sitting role in Greg's system. Like it's different. It's kind of like a innate like ability in your brain to kind of change that process of how you're supposed to play. It's different. And it's all about the reps, like you said, that you don't get them as much as what you do with the club. I do think it kind of makes some challenges, and it seems like it affects guys when they first get with the program. And, you know, you can tell with the guys that have limited caps. I know Scally kind of struggled, and he's only had two caps with the team. He kind of struggled in some of those friendlies. But these guys have the talent. They play in these different systems, come over here. It does impact them.
Yeah, Greg's going to want to do the type of thing typically. Now, maybe he'll change it up. I mean,
that would be awesome.
Coaches have done this.
But also,
sometimes it's worked, and then sometimes it was Steve Sampson in 98 where they went to a 3-6-1 and they got utterly destroyed. By the way, one of the teams that did that was Iran, so let's not Anyway, let's not bring up bad mojo right before this World Cup where you also have to play Iran again. But
you're also playing the matchup. Like, you're playing the matchup, and, you know, as we get into expectation, like, you have to realize that you play a Wales team. When you're just looking at this group overall, and Greg Berhalter has said this, and it's kind of driven me crazy. Like, oh, what are your expectations for this tournament, Greg? Well, there are two separate tournaments. It's the group stage, and then if we get through the group stage, then it's the knockout, and anything can happen. It's like, no, man, you should know what you're going to do game in, game out. If you don't win this Wales game, then already, like, then you're behind the eight ball. Because if you don't get out of them, then you get England, and then you get a tussle with Iran, who on their day will not only can beat you, will beat you. And so if you don't get out, and to Colin's point, what you're saying, maybe you change things up, you kind of have to get out in front of this thing. Like, you have to be attacking.
Well, and beyond, but that, right. But Berhalter's system typically has been, we sit back, absorb pressure, and his phrase he's used is, we like to disorganize the other opponent. And so, meaning, we're going to keep the ball away from you. We're going to kind of kick it around. The empty bucket is another term that's been used, where it's like they kick it around the sides and then work it back to the middle and then back to the other side of the field and then back again. And the goal is to make the other team go, God damn it. And then they just run and get out of position, and then you break them down and you hopefully go get a good chance.
You know who is also hard in the head and coach like that? Wales.
Yeah.
They're going to try to do the same damn
Wales
thing
gonna
to you.
Wales is going to do this too. And so right. I'm with you that I take the fight to Wales. I say, let's go. Let's deploy these young guys who we've not had a lot of time with together. Let them go do their thing. Let them play in ways that they are comfortable playing in, from what they've played previously when they were all together at the U15 and U17 and U20 level, all that stuff. Let them play that way. And then also what they've become comfortable doing with their club team. Let's do that. Let's allow guys to flourish in ways that makes the most sense for them. This is a World Cup, man.
Yeah.
We're done with trying to figure it out and experiment. I know you got your system, but yeah, it's time to pull all the strings and put all your chips on the table. But that Wales game is important. And like you said, Beam, because of the way this group stacks up, play Wales first, then you play England, then you play Iran. I'm sure that comes as news to you if you didn't listen to the thing I said 5 or 10 minutes ago where I talked about all of our fun days we're doing with our global soccer celebration. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Wales, if you don't get a 3 points out of that game.
Yeah, you're staring at death in the tournament.
You basically need 4 points minimum to get out of this group, because England is going to probably win it by winning two games. They will probably have a good opportunity to do that. They very well will beat the United States. Like, let's not mince words there. The U.S. is going to have a tough time getting anything other than, like, 0 points out of that game.
Yeah.
So let's assume a loss with England just for now. And then if you can get the 3 points from Wales, suddenly you have more confidence in that England game. Maybe you get a result you're not expecting.
Maybe
you have
the pressure of England being England, they stumble against Iran and draw. Like, then all of a sudden, which could be obviously a very big
that
thing.
That could change things.
They have histories of crashing out dramatically in big tournaments. But not recently. I mean, they got to the semifinals 4 years ago and then got to the finals of the Euros last summer. So, like, this is a team over the recent years and the heartbreak that they've had, at least from an England perspective, that has gone on to do good things, and they've been on the precipice of breaking through. So which England team are you going to get?
Yeah, but the calendar there is, too, just as we talk about the U.S. and their September window, that it was, you know, not very confidence-instilling. What England went through the summer and some of their games they had was also not very very good for their mental state.
No, you're right. And so while England, obviously, anything could happen here, the likelihoods and the predictability of all this is that your best chance at wins are going to be against Wales and Iran, and or results is probably the better way to say that, right? Your best chance of getting a result, either a tie or a win, is those two games. In the middle of that is the game you're most likely to lose if you played the odds and percentages. So if you come out of the gates and get a point against Wales, that's not great.
Yeah.
That puts way more pressure on, well, now we got to get a result against England too.
Then you press,
and you're pressing,
and
they could kill you with that, right? So being able to play England the way you want to versus trying to be desperate and say, we've got to get a point at least, we've got to try to win this game or tie it, that's going to make it tougher to beat England, ironically and weirdly enough. If you get the win against Wales, then I think you play a lot more free against England.
I think you can play within Berhalter's system.
Yes, and then you can try that strategy and see how that goes. But then either way, what happens with England in that game, if you lose it, you still got the 3 points in the bag, and then you play Iran. And maybe Iran has already eliminated themselves by losing two games or something like that. But then, you know, like, if we just kick the ball around for 90 minutes and keep Iran out of the goal, we advance to the next round. Like, there's a good chance that happens. But if it's not that case, Iran has a win somewhere, then you start freaking out. And then you start saying, okay, now if we tie and we're different on goal differential, like we have to go get a win. That's why I'm saying, like, even with a win, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
Like, even if you beat Wales, that's difficult. But I don't think you want to find your 3 points on the last match day. That's what I'm saying. You, I mean, like, you can't leave it to then. You've got to get your 3 points right off the bat to build confidence. So, obviously, I know that's the ideal situation, but that's also the...
It's the most realistic situation,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Not that Wales is going to be easy. None of these teams are going to be easy. Yeah. So let me ask you this. With all that said, I'll pose this question to both of you guys. What is the reasonable expectation? What is, like, bare minimum I want to see this from this team? And it could be getting out, you know, like, where you think they finish. It could be that type of play that you expect to see. It could be certain performances from players. What's, like, a bare minimum thing you're looking for? What's a... I think this is their huge potential in this tournament. And then here's the, like, 1% chances they could do this. Like, where do you guys fall on each of those type of questions?
All right. So for me, I think you want to see this team. And again, I just go back to that first game. First game is so, so important for them to get a positive result. And no, I'm not talking about positive result 1 point. I'm talking about positive result 3 points. And if Greg mixes the lineup up, okay, that's good. But finally, we've gotten to the golden boy. We've gotten to Christian Pulisic, who has had a lot of pressure on him, and it was there 4 years ago when they missed out on the World Cup. But I want to see him live up to the expectations, man. If you're going to be donned that, and he's not the one who's donning himself or crowning himself that, if you're going to be called the golden boy of the generation, then you need to act like it. Like, he needs to act like a player that was purchased for $60 million and playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world. You need to act like that. And as well, Brendan Aaronson, who's had some big moments, would love to see him get some run. And Tyler Adams, who is, I think, the best mixer-upper that you have on the field and will scrap with just about anybody in this entire tournament, play like that. Play like that, because if you do, you're going to have Wales and Iran and England wanting to run their head through a wall, because he has an innate ability to get under some of the best players in the world's skin, and that's great. So that, to me, baseline expectations, Christian Pulisic, let's see it, and then Tyler Adams, go out and be what you are.
Yeah, I like that. Colin?
I mean, with FIFA, EA Sports, we've already saw it. He's going to score 5 goals in 5 games. That's what they already told us.
Yep,
that's right. I forgot they simulated that.
No, I agree. I mean, I'm kind of in the mindset is I want to see them get out of the group stage. I think with the disappointments of last cycle and not making it, I just want to see some positive momentum with the program in terms of getting to that point. I know they could match up with possibly Argentina if they win the first game out of the group stage, and then that would be, you know, my expectations would be off the table at that point. I just love to see them put up a good fight. But yeah, no, it's about starting fast. I want them to be aggressive. I don't want a conservative lineup where you've got guys like Jesus Ferreira in this lineup and you're trying to play for a point in your system. Like, no, be aggressive, get some goals early, try to set the tone with your goal differential and get 3 points so that you don't have that pressure, and let all the pressure be on England. You know, there's more pressure on them to win that game than there would be for us in that point.
Yeah.
It's getting off to a fast start. You don't want to start behind the eight ball. And then, you know, just kind of see where things fall. Maybe Iran gets a crazy tie with England in that first game, and then now you're playing with a completely different group than you thought. Mm-hmm. There's just so much that could happen. I want to see if they do go with Sargent to start at the nine. Can he keep up the form he's had with club? And can he be aggressive in that aspect? Like, you want to see Pulisic be the golden boy and do what he does, but can you get actual play from your number nine that you've been asking for this entire World Cup cycle?
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys have said there. And I think to echo what you said about Tyler Adams, like, and this is my thought, not just with Tyler Adams, although I think he's got, to use the fun quote we're all using, I think he's got that dog in him. Like, he is the guy that I think could really tune up a couple of players.
I agree.
Every game, get them into some situations where they retaliate, the other team does, and then suddenly you get yellow cards, you get free kicks out of nowhere because he's been doing that for 60 minutes and now they get frustrated with him and they take it out on someone else, and then you get a good foul in a bad spot for them and hopefully you convert. I want to know this about this U.S. national team, and let's just pause here. If you've been listening to this with your children, this may be a time where you just realize it's time for the grownups to have a little quick conversation. Let's all get together. Let's just listen as grownups. I want to know these guys are not fucking jersey pushers and are not guys who just sit around and sell Instagram likes and all that crap that everybody sees with this team and goes, yeah, look, Christian Pulisic, oh, I want to wear Nike, or oh, Tyler Adams is great, or oh, Brennan Aaronson, like, make it happen. Now's the time, Gio Reyna. Like, nothing hurts. Your ankle's a little sore. Get out there. I don't care. Tim Weah, you've got it. You've got everything. You are worth it. You can do it. Don't let anyone stop you when you get three guys chopping at your legs.
You can do it, Jordan Morris.
And put a hole through the goaltender. Like, I'm just telling you.
Dortmund's not winning the German league. We all are the Bundesliga. We know that's not happening. Just
lay it all out here. I'm just saying. I need to see this team not just be the guys that like get transferred all around Europe to sell a bunch of jerseys because Americans will buy them because we're gullible and stupid, and then they don't actually perform for their, like, now's the time to prove all those people wrong who say Christian Pulisic wasn't worth $60 million.
Like me.
Right. Prove everyone wrong that says you are not those guys. You are not just there for the Instagram likes. You are there to actually win. You are, yeah. You're not just there an online chess player. So, all right. I had to get that off my chest. That's been years building for that.
What's your expectation? I mean, again, Colin said expectation, get out of the group. I think that's my expectation too. Now, caveat, I'm terrified. Like, honestly,
I'm terrified too.
Yes.
But here's the thing. That's the thing about having expectations is sometimes they are scary and terrifying, and you have to live up to them.
Scared to be great.
Right. Don't want to be scared to be great. That's it. I'm just saying my expectation is they have to get out of the group.
Yeah. Baseline.
You have to find a way to do that because that's what this team was built to do. I don't know what's going to happen in the next World Cup, but I know in the next World Cup, the expectations are going to be, you think they're high now?
Yeah.
You think there's excitement now? Less than 4 years from now, when you're playing on U.S. soil, everyone's going to look to this. Could this finally be the time where the U.S. wins a World Cup? That will be a stupid narrative. All right. That will be dumb to get to that. Like, cause that's like, is Brazil great? Like, there's 17 teams that we're probably looking at that go like, well, they have an outside shot, right? Like,
Cristiano Ronaldo has still not left Manchester United in 4 years' time.
My point is, like, there are like 9 really good soccer countries who are going to this World Cup saying we could win it all, and they're going to be absolutely disappointed because the one excellent team that does win it is going to probably beat 5 or 6 other ridiculously talented, far better than the U.S. has ever put together teams. And they're going to all be thinking that same thing this time and 4 years from now. Will the U.S. win the World Cup in 4 years' time? I doubt it. But what you cannot do is get bounced in the group stage yet again and have 4 more years of looking at this going, well, maybe,
Greg
maybe
is
next
fired.
Time.
Greg's fired if that happens. Yeah.
Well, you know what? There's an argument to be made. Maybe that should just be a thing anyway, not firing him, but saying you get 4 years with this group and then we bring in another guy from like January 2023 and that guy goes for the next 3.5 years. And then after that cycle, you get another person and you just keep doing this every 4 years because it shouldn't be a permanent 20-year job. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a 6-year job. It should be a one cycle type of job in my mind where you go through, you build the club, you do the strategy, and then after that, everyone resets.
You get a shot at it.
Everyone resets, and then you build off of what you learned, but maybe a new coach comes in and says, I like this player, but I think I could do this. I like that he runs him out there, and like I think he could be a false nine as opposed to how they deploy him. And let that guy go have another 4 years to fix that, work that, see what happens. But yeah, definitely, if they don't make it out of the group, Greg doesn't get another shot with this team.
No chance.
And you have to do that instantly. Yeah. You don't wait around until summer of 24 to decide, maybe we got a 2-year cycle here. No, like.
Well, yeah, because you nailed it. You have to build the momentum of hosting on your own turf for the next cycle. So if you go into that with what feels like a lame duck head coach, like that's going to kill all of the excitement.
And not to get too far ahead on that, but last thought on that 2026. Like, you're guaranteed to be in. Go crazy with the next hire. Like, the next coach can be a nut job. Like, because you don't have to worry about qualifying. So let him go out there and do all these crazy, like, you know what? We've never tried. The U.S. has never played this way, but we're going to try it. Like, give it a shot. Like, you've got 4 years to work a new system, a completely different identity for this team than the team that sits back, absorbs 9,000 shots in the box, and then has 2 counters, and they have to hit one of them to win 1-0. You don't have to be that team anymore. I don't think they are that team right now, but Greg Berhalter plays that way of we're going to sit back, absorb pressure, try to break you down that way. If we have possession of the ball, that's great, but we want to make sure that, you know, we play it slow. You can go out there and be the, like, crazy attacking team 4 years from now. This tournament, probably not yet.
Worst case scenario, this tournament, they do that, they get scored on in every game.
Yeah. I mean, right.
Like that, honestly.
You're right. But I'm saying next, you have 4 years to figure that out. With what you have with Greg, I want to see them play that empty bucket system precisely the way it's meant to be played, in that you break down teams just enough, but you don't do it. You don't overkill. You don't sit there for 10 minutes where you're going, we haven't even put the ball into the 18, mm-hmm. and we've just been screwing around, kicking it back and forth. Like, I want to see this team break down teams efficiently, not just waiting around for someone to make the biggest mistake they've ever made in a World Cup, and then you can score on them. No, like, I want them to take the fight while still maintaining the principles of what this team does.
On the frustration with that, Colin, you can attest to this, is that they're so talented. And then they play that system, and it's like, well, if you just let these guys go. And I think that's why U.S. Yeah. men's national team fans are kind of upset with the way that this is going. Because you look at this roster. I mean, it's heads and shoulders above where it was 8 years ago.
The fact that Gio Reyna and Brendan Aaronson may be coming off the bench for this team is ridiculous. Like, they are stacked in the top half. Like, the attacking half of this roster is pretty loaded. Never mind the fact you could get your fullbacks involved, too, and really be doing something.
But. Yeah, and I think that's what is disappointing. So maybe Greg does have a wrinkle. Maybe he does have a wrinkle, but the way that this has trended, it's going to be the same, like, all right, we're going to play kickball. And play kickball, if we get the ball, great. We're going to try to keep it. We're going to try to defend to the death, and then we're going to try to win it in, like, the 80th minute. Like, that's the way that they do it. It's the way that they do it.
But when they were good against Mexico, they didn't play that way.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, when they went out and won some of these big games that happened this cycle where they played really well, they didn't do that. And so I hope they won't do it in these next three games. And then we go from there. So, all right. I guess that's it. Are we all predicting they get out of the group?
Yeah.
I don't sound so confident, Colin.
We all know that's the expectation.
I think they will. I think they will. And then we'll be bitterly disappointed when they don't.
All right.
Yeah, so on our previews that we did,
we got them out of the group.
All right, we have them coming out of the group, and both you and I picked the entire World Cup, which is 1,000% going to be wrong.
That's 100%.
We have them facing Netherlands. Oh, we have them facing Netherlands and Virgil van Dijk.
Well, you know what, though? Like, because Netherlands comes out of the group that is Qatar's group,
yep.
which means there's
not. And Senegal.
Yes, but that means they're not going to face, like, almost every other group has a team that is one of the top seven teams, top eight teams, you know, it would be. Qatar is the eighth team in Group A, or in the pot A when they drew these.
That's right.
So the U.S., the positive way to look at that is they would be playing a team in the next round that's not one of the best eight teams in the tournament, right? I mean, like, or seven teams in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Like, Netherlands might be eighth, but there is a chance they're playing a team that's not as hard as, let's say, like, if you drew Brazil, or if you drew France, or if you drew
Argentina, which is a possibility in the second round of the knockout.
Yeah. That's right.
If you shock the world in the group stage,
oh my gosh,
and you get out of the group, you perhaps have a dance of destiny with Netherlands or with Senegal. And then if you get through that, you're basically on a head-on collision course with Lionel Messi in Argentina.
Could you imagine?
No, I can't. No, I can't imagine that.
Colin,
I think they get out of
Don't you think that would be one of the biggest TV numbers ever if that was what happens?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about the roster that you played against. Again, we don't want to talk too much about that game, but against Belgium back then.
Yeah. I mean, it was loaded.
And that's the best
part. It's all the same guys.
It's the best part about the World Cup, because that Belgium game can happen.
Yeah,
like, it can happen, and you can win a game against that team.
The Germany 2002 game can happen, where the U.S. outplayed Germany for the majority of that game, and Germany got a goal that was fine, and then the U.S. had a goal not disallowed. It was stopped because a guy stuck his hand out on the line, and they didn't call it. And that could have been the difference between the U.S. going to the Final Four, mm-hmm. to the semis of the World Cup. They were a hands width away from possibly going, and we'll never know. But I'm just saying, this U.S. national team has had some better success. They have played with some of the best teams, different iterations of this team. This is the most talented group we've ever taken to a World Cup. So
by far.
So the chances are there.
Act like it.
I like that. Act like it. You're that guy.
Yeah. Except for when you play Virgil van Dijk in the Netherlands.
So. He sucks.
You know what? We'll cross.
He sucks.
Not the Velvet Rope Club anymore. Well, you know what? If we get to that bridge, we'll cross it when we get there.
That's right.
And we'll I will be thrilled when we cross there.
All right. So I think we're all predicting them to get out of the group, and then we're hanging on for dear life throughout all of it. Thank you for listening to our World Cup preview. Make sure you check out all of our other podcasts that we did to preview the World Cup. Make sure you check out Mad About Hoops, the college basketball podcast. Neighbor Eric, it's probably his favorite one because I know how much he loves college basketball. Mm-hmm. Colin Berger, Evil Bald Colin, thanks for joining us on this. And let's go USA.
It's great, man. Go USA.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next time and have a great World Cup.